All right. Good morning. Thank you. Thanks, Chris. We're going to be looking at 2 Samuel today. We're going to look at part of chapter 21 and chapter 22. We're going to kind of jump around a little between those two chapters. Chapter 22 of 2 Samuel is actually a song written by King David later in his life. It's a rather long song. Most pop songs on the radio or that stream on Spotify or Apple Music, most pop songs are about 150 to 300 words average. King David's song has approximately 840 words. It's a lot longer than most of the songs you'd hear on the radio. It's certainly not the longest song ever written. A couple of long songs I remember from my growing up years. American Pie by Don McLean. That comes in at a whopping 869 words. And even longer, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald by Gordon Lightfoot is over 900 words. So David's song in chapter 22 of 2 Samuel is kind of in that class of song length. But David's song doesn't tell a story about the day the music died. It doesn't tell the story of a sinking ship. David's song is all about extolling the God of heaven and earth. In this song, if we had to give it a title, the title would probably be My Rock, My Fortress, and My Deliverer, because that's the first line that David writes and sings, and that's the theme that he returns to time and time again throughout the song. David was a very prolific songwriter. You're probably aware that he wrote most of the Psalms. He didn't write the entire book of Psalms, but many of the Psalms that we read and sing today were written by King David. And David didn't write songs for entertainment, or he didn't write them for the stage or for profit. David wrote songs as a statement about who God is, about what he perceived God to be doing in his life. David's songs are kind of like his journal entries. How many of you keep a spiritual journal? You write, kind of keep a track of what God is doing in your life. Many of us do that. It's a good practice to get into. I like to write things down that the Lord is teaching me. That way, you know, sometimes I'm able to hang on to lessons longer, not forget them so quickly. But like you probably have experienced a devotional life, trying to journal, we can be inconsistent. There could be periods of life where we do it very faithfully, but then we let ourselves get distracted and our attention gets absorbed by other things, or we go through challenges and our devotional life might get interrupted. David wrote in Psalm 34, he said, "I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips." That was David's intention, like it's our intention, to pay attention to the Lord at all times. But like us, David was somewhat inconsistent in his devotional life. There were times when he was living full on for the Lord, and we have many of the Psalms written about David's experiences with the Lord. Or even when he was suffering, David would write a song about how he cried out to the Lord and how God rescued him and delivered him. But there were things in David's life that he allowed to distract him, and he would get his eyes off the Lord for a season, to his harm and to his detriment. Most recently, in the chapters we're going to read today, David is being distracted by the reemergence of an old threat from an old enemy, the Philistines. Philistines haven't been a problem in David's life for quite a few years. We haven't read about them for quite a few chapters. The last we read about the Philistines was back in chapter 8 of 2 Samuel, and David had scored some very decisive victories over the Philistines to where they weren't a problem. They had been a problem and a plague to the nation of Israel for generations. But for a long period of David's reign, he had successfully defeated them and squelched the threat that they posed to the nation of Israel. Well, they're reemerging now later in David's life as a threat, and so it's going to kind of distract David. David had been distracted in recent years by some other things too. There was that whole episode where David fell into adulterous sin, where he committed adultery with a woman and had her husband killed to try and cover up his sin. That didn't go well. David had been distracted also by a couple of very overt attempts to usurp his throne, a couple of attempts to depose him. First by his son Absalom, who tried to steal the kingdom from him, then by a guy named Sheba, tried to remove David from the throne. So David's attention has been kind of distracted and diverted. But we're going to see today in chapter 21 and 22 a moment where David realizes he needs to get his eyes back on the Lord. He needs to turn from the distractions of his life, get his eyes off himself, get his eyes off his own ambitions, and get them back onto the Lord and begin worshiping again. Before we look at the song of chapter 22, I just want to reread a couple of verses in chapter 21 that we looked at last week. All right, we looked at chapter 21 last week when the Philistines first started becoming a threat again. So I'm going to look at chapter 21, verse 15. Second Samuel 21:15 says, "Once again, there was a battle between the Philistines and Israel, and David went down with his men to fight against the Philistines, and he became exhausted. And Ishbi-Benob, one of the descendants of Rapha, whose bronze spearhead weighed 300 shekels, who was armed with a new sword, he said he would kill David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to David's rescue. He struck the Philistine down and killed him. And then David's men swore to him, saying, 'Never again will you go out with us to battle, so that the lamp of Israel will not be extinguished.'" Okay, let's reflect on what just happened. This was a very humbling moment for David. He goes out to face a giant, Ishbi-Benob, expecting fully to win because David was a giant killer. That's what he did. That's how he rose to prominence. Remember, he went out and he faced a 9-foot-tall giant named Goliath when he was but a teenager. Took him down with one rock. David was a giant killer. Now he's older. He's getting up there in years, but he is a seasoned, experienced warrior. He goes out again to fight a Philistine giant. This was, again, a descendant of Rapha. We talked about Rapha and how Rapha's descendants were like a whole clan of giants. Goliath was a son of Rapha. And so he went out to face this new giant, but he doesn't come out victorious. In fact, he very nearly loses his life. So what's going on here? When David was but a boy, he could slay a giant, but now he's a seasoned warrior. Has he lost it? Can God not use older dudes? I hope that's not the case. I really don't think age was the issue here with David. All right, something else is going on. I think something spiritual is going on. David's ambition was not in line with God's will. David's ambition to go out and kill yet another giant, to yet reaffirm himself as Israel's champion, that was not God's plan for him at this stage in his life. David was used to fighting up front. David was a man of blood. He was a man of war. He was always on the front lines. But he had to face the fact that at this point in his life, if he insisted on continuing to go to the front line, to continue to try and show himself to be Israel's champion, God's blessing wasn't going to be on him. God certainly didn't bless this effort to face this giant. Those are hard moments to face for us, aren't they? When we have desires or ambitions or intentions that are so strong, but we realize they're not the Lord's will. It's not God's will for us right now. And those moments when we have to lay down our own ambitions, our own desires, those can be the hardest moments to really worship the Lord. Because it's easy to get resentful. It's easy to resist the Lord and try and do it on our own, or to obey the Lord, but to do it grudgingly. We got to wonder, how is David going to receive this new development. His men who he commands, they tell him how it's going to be. They say, never again are you going out to battle with us. Because you're like a light for this kingdom. We need a king who's alive. You're David. And I believe that his men were even speaking prophetically at this point, saying that David was a lamp, because they didn't know for a fact that David was going to be the ancestor of the Messiah. But I think the Spirit was speaking through them, because Jesus was the son of David. He was a literal blood descendant from David. And they're saying, we need you to stay alive, David. It's not God's time for you to lay down your life on the battlefield. Okay, I think this was a very significant moment in David's life. Now, as we've done at various points throughout this series in 2 Samuel, we've prepared a song that depicts this scene between David and Abishai when David rescued him from the giant Ishbi-Benob. And Abishai had to break the news to David that you're not going to fight anymore. And the struggle that ensued probably within David's own heart at accepting this. So I'm going to ask the ushers maybe to turn out the house lights. And Zach and Liam are going to reenact this song for us.
Out of the fray, out of harm's way, quickly, quickly now.
I don't know what happened. I must have dropped my guard.
Get some water, get him to the chair. Steady there, make room, give him air. Gently, gently now.
I'll be fine, just find my sword and get me back to the front line.
Sir, you almost lost your life.
Stop talking like a worried wife. Douse the light. That's my helmet and my shield.
Sir, I must make this appeal.
By now the Philistines are scared. Ready the troops, I'll meet you there. Now help me get out of this chair.
You're not going anywhere.
Excuse me?
Never again will you go out with us to battle. Never lamp of Israel be extinguished ever again.
Madness! That lamp shines as bright as it's ever been.
That may be true, but heaven forbid we ever let it grow dim.
War, fought giants before, for the Lord, holy, holy is his name.
You are so much more than just the wars that you've won.
How can I stay inside when the battle's outside? Shall I run and hide like a coward now?
You'll have to find the courage to let others carry on. Your life is like a torch of messianic hope held high. You can't let that fire die. Don't let that fire die. We won't let that fire die.
Let's leave the light on and stay a while. Let's take a moment and just breathe. Rest in the promise of his unfailing love. season of peace, a blessed season of peace. Leave the light on. What will I do without a battle to win?
Maybe it's time to lay down your sword and pick up your pen again.
The Lord is my light, my deliverer, my refuge and my shield. I call to the Lord, who is worthy, by his mercy I am saved. The waves of death swirled around me, the torrent of destruction. The grave had nearly overwhelmed me. Then I called to the Lord.
The Lord is my rock,
my deliverer, my refuge and my shield.
I call to the Lord, who is worthy, by his mercy I am saved.
Out of the darkness you are light, out of my blindness perfect sight. You cause me to stand upon the heights with you.
The Lord is my rock, my deliverer, my refuge and my shield. I call to the Lord, who is worthy, by his mercy I am saved.
The Lord is my rock, my deliverer, my refuge and
Thanks, Liam, Zach, Debbie. That was beautiful. That must have been a difficult confrontation for Abishai to make, to have to tell David that your time on the front line is over. But David's men, they knew what David himself might have been reluctant to admit, that David needed to enter a new season of life. And we don't know why. We don't know why God determined that David couldn't fight on the front line anymore. Maybe fighting had become an ego thing for David. Maybe it had become too much of his identity to be Israel's champion. Maybe it had become just too important to him to be the one always winning. And he was unwilling to pass the baton on to others. And so his men essentially had to give him an edict. Never again will you go out with us to battle, so that the lamp of Israel will not be extinguished. You know, it's so important for us to know that our ambitions, our intentions, and our efforts are in line with God's will. That our desires are something we put before the Lord at all times, because He wants us to walk in the light of His will. And the parameters of God's will are not restrictive. You know, within those parameters is liberty and freedom. So David's men take up the fight, and they defeat the Philistines. And last week we looked at the following three battles that took place, three giants that were taken out by David's men. And the question of whether or not David accepted this new season in his life is answered by what David writes in the next chapter. Chapter 22 is David's song of praise for the victories that the Lord had given him and the nation. So I'm going to read part of chapter 22. It said, David sang to the Lord the words of this song when the Lord delivered him from the hand of his enemies and from the hand of Saul. He said, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation. He is my stronghold, my refuge, and my Savior. From violent people you save me. I called out to the Lord who is worthy of praise, and I've been saved from my enemies. The waves of death swirled around me. The torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. The cords of the grave coiled around me. The snares of death confronted me. But in my distress, I called to the Lord. I called out to my God, and from His temple, He heard my voice. My cry came to His ears, and the earth trembled and quaked. The foundations of the heaven shook. They trembled because He was angry. Smoke rose from His nostrils, consuming fire from His mouth. Burning coals blazed out of it, and He parted the heavens and came down. Dark clouds were under His feet. He mounted the cherubim, and He flew. He soared on the wings of the wind. He made darkness His canopy around Him and the dark rain clouds of the sky. Out of the brightness of His presence, bolts of lightning blazed forth, and the Lord thundered from heaven. The voice of the Most High resounded. He shot His arrows and scattered the enemy. With great bolts of lightning, He routed them. And the valleys of the sea were exposed, the foundations of the earth laid bare. At the rebuke of the Lord, at the blast of breath from His nostrils, He reached down from on high. He took hold of me. He drew me out of deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemy, from my foes who were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of disaster, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a spacious place. He rescued me because He delighted in me." Now, maybe you're aware of this. We're going to stop there for now. Maybe you're aware that this song that he wrote in 2 Samuel 22 is almost word for word what David wrote in Psalm 18. Which he wrote as a much younger man. There's some slight changes, but it's fascinating to me that as a young man, David could express such praise to the Lord. But now, as an older man, he looks back on even more decades of God's faithfulness. And he's able to reaffirm these themes that he sung as a young man. And he expresses actually three themes in this song that we sang. The Lord is His rock, His fortress, and His deliverer. And although this song goes on, 53 verses it lasts, he returns to these three themes again and again. The Lord is His rock and His fortress and His deliverer. The Lord is our rock signifies that God is our strength. The Lord is our strength. The fact that the Lord is our fortress signifies that He is our defense. And the fact that He is our deliverer, because we need a deliverer. Now, all Christians, all Christ followers who've walked and served or known the Lord, you experience God in these capacities at various different times. But like Israel, the nation of Israel, they experience God as their strength and their defense and their deliverer time and time again. But the story of the Old Testament is them having these experiences and then forgetting them, straying. Forgetting how God rescued them and them seeking after lesser forms of strength, lesser forms of defense. I want to consider these three real quickly. I want to consider first God as our strength. When I was a young boy, 6, 7, 8 years old, I was obsessed with the idea of physical strength. I mean, I just the idea of being powerful was something really attractive to me. When I was 6 years old, a toy company came out with a boy's doll, an action figure called Big Jim. Did anybody have a Big Jim doll? This was an action figure for boys. Big Jim had arms that would flex and his bicep would bulge. He had a button on his back that would chop his arm and he'd break boards and logs with his arm. You know, Big Jim was this action figure that signified strength. Around the same era, at the same age, the TV show The $6 Million Man was what I was planted in front of every Friday night. 8 o'clock, The $6 Million Man. Who had superhuman powers because of his robotic arms and legs. I loved the idea of physical strength. I remember my friends and I would play $6 Million Man on the playground at recess. You know, we'd fight in slow motion, you know, making all the sound effects. Because the idea of being strong and powerful was very, very attractive. As a warrior and as a king, what David had come to realize again and again and again was that he did not possess the kind of strength needed to do what he was called to do. He didn't have the strength to face down giants on his own. He didn't have strength to lead a nation. And he learned firsthand again and again that he had to look to the Lord as his source of strength. That the Lord was not only physical strength, but emotional strength, spiritual strength, mental strength. The Lord is our source of strength. In this 2 Samuel 22 song, he says in verse 34, he says, "The Lord makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He causes me to stand on the heights. He trains my hands for battle. My arms can bend a bow of bronze." And for the Lord's strength to be active and available in our lives, there's one thing that we have to be able to acknowledge, a truth that we have to be able to live in the light of, and that's the fact that we are weak. We don't have, it's not like the Lord augments the strength we already have. We look to Him as our sole source of strength. In fact, the Apostle Paul put it this way. He says, "For Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties, for when I am weak, I am strong." I don't like to even acknowledge my weakness, but Paul had come to that place of spiritual maturity where he was able to delight in it because he recognized that only as we acknowledge what we lack are we able to truly see how sufficient the Lord is. I find that the Lord's strength is much more available to me when I ask for it in times that I don't feel like I need it. And you know, oftentimes we wait till the trials, we wait till the crisis moments that we ask for the Lord to intervene. We're feeling crushed and weak. We call out for the Lord, "Lord, strengthen me." But I find that if I'm feeling strong, if I'm feeling good, if I'm feeling like life is just going along at a nice pace, those are the times that are most critical that I ask the Lord for strength because I can quickly forget how insufficient I am. And every day we seek the Lord saying, "Lord, be my strength." Let's consider God as our defense. David said, "The Lord is my fortress." A fortress was a defense against enemy attackers. It would protect a city from the onslaught. And we set up all kinds of fortresses in our lives. We take all kinds of defensive measures. You know, we buy a security system for our home so that we won't get broken into. You know, some people learn different methods of physical self-defense, different martial arts or fighting techniques so that they're ever in a physical confrontation, they can defend themselves. Some people carry pepper spray. Some people carry firearms. We take all these defensive measures, and we do so usually with the hope that we'll never have to use them. Is that accurate to say? We you know, you buy a home security system hoping you're not going to get broken into, but just in case. You buy a gun hoping you're not going to have to use it. Was it Mr. Miyagi told Danielson, his karate student, you know, karate for self-defense only? We take these defensive measures hoping that we won't have to use it. But regarding the spiritual defense that the Lord provides for us, you know you're going to use it. You're going to need it. That's not a measure of defense that we're not going to need. We're not going to get to the end of our life and say, you know, I'm glad I had the Lord, but I really didn't need him. Never called out to him, never came to a place where I needed his intervention. We need the Lord's defense regularly. We need the Lord's defense against all kinds of things. We need the Lord's defense against the wickedness of people. There are people in the world who are wicked. We saw that on display all last week with these horrendous mass shootings. Every week it seems like there's a new display, taking it up a few notches, of how wicked and how evil and how destructive people can be for no reason. And even those occasions when people aren't physically destructive, people in the world can be vindictive. They can be treacherous. They can hate for no reason. We need to ask the Lord, Lord, protect me from the wickedness of people. We need the Lord's defense against the dangers in the world. There's a lot of dangers in the world. There's a lot of precarious situations. There's illnesses and injuries. I've got some young neighbor friends who they saw me trip in a hole in my yard. They like to remind me of that time when I tripped and fell, succumbed to that danger in my yard. I suspect they look out the window and watch for me to do it again sometime. But the world is full of dangers, and I cry out to the Lord regularly asking for his defense. I ask that he would protect my wife and my children and myself from illnesses and accidents and injuries and dangers in the world. I think there is a value to that. I believe there are unnecessary injuries that come our way because we don't seek the Lord's defense. We don't ask him for his protection. And yet, as we can see very plainly, the Lord doesn't shield, doesn't defend against all dangers, does he? Sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes tragic things happen. I think asking for the Lord's defense and the Lord's protection can prevent some unnecessary things, but sometimes destructive things happen. Sometimes evil people are allowed to carry out destructive things, and it's heartbreaking. But even so, we have this assurance, and this is not just a trite little pithy way to justify. God does work horrible things together for good. God takes bad situations, and we can know that he can work the most tragic, the most evil actions of people and work them together for good. We can be confident that even in the things that we do suffer, he is weaving them together in a tapestry of good purposes. So we need the Lord's protection against the wickedness of people. We need his protection against the dangers of the world. We also need the Lord's protection against temptation. And that was a lesson that David didn't learn well enough. When David was tempted to commit adultery, I wonder what would have happened if the morning before that happened, if in David's devotional time, if he had a devotional time that morning, if he would have asked the Lord, Lord, keep me from temptation. Help me to steer clear of temptation today. Help me to recognize when I'm being tempted and not succumb to it. Oh, beloved, that is so critical that we learn how to pray against temptation. Jesus said we ought to incorporate that into our regular prayers. Even in the moments of temptation, when the temptation presents itself, that's a good time. Say, Lord, steer me away from this temptation. When you're tempted by lust or by appetite or anything, Lord, I'm being tempted right now. Give me the strength. I know this is not your will. I know this is not spiritually or physically healthy. Steer me away from this temptation, Lord. The Lord is our strength. The Lord is our defense. Let's finally consider the Lord as our deliverer. David knew well the danger of being hunted. He knew what it was like to be in fear for his life. He spent years on the run when King Saul was pursuing him out of wrath and jealousy, seeking to kill him. David had to hide out in caves and fortresses and foreign cities. He knew what it was like to need the Lord's rescue. He wrote many psalms during this time when he feared for his life. Psalms like Psalm 7, where he said, save me, deliver me from all who pursue me, or they will tear me like a lion, rip me to pieces with no one to rescue me. That sounds strangely similar to the situation we find ourselves in on this side of the cross, doesn't it? Peter said it this way. He said, He said, be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. I pray that the Lord keep within us a healthy, healthy fear. The kind of fear that keeps us close to Him. The kind of fear that keeps us hanging on to Him and clinging to Him as our deliverer. I'm not talking about the neurotic kind of fear. The kind of fear that's afraid to live life. Perfect love casts out all that kind of fear. But the healthy, godly fear that leads to wisdom. You know, the people of this world do not comprehend the danger that they're in. We want to think that all is fine and good, that we can live life the way we want to live. We can do the things we want to do. We can follow the inclinations and impulses of our flesh. And that hopefully it will go well with us. Hopefully if there's an afterlife, hopefully if there's a balance of good and bad deeds, my good deeds scale side of my scale will be heavier. And if there's an afterlife, I'll earn heaven. People don't recognize the danger that they're in. Trying to live life according to their own standards. They need the Lord as their deliverer to rescue them from eternal darkness. You know, I'm not a real ardent talk radio fan, but you know, if I'm in the car driving during, you know, if Rush is on or Hannity, or I'll sometimes flip it on. And last Monday I was running an errand and I it was 9:30 in the morning and I flipped on and Rush was on. And I was blown away. I heard Rush Limbaugh give a really pretty good introduction of the gospel. And John, you heard this too, didn't you? Monday morning, I found the transcript of the show. Here's what Rush said. He was talking about how, you know, he usually talks about the liberals on the left, but he started using the language of faith. He talked about the non-believers, those who don't believe in Christianity. He said, the non-believers say Christianity is one of the biggest tricks that's ever been played on people. To tell them that there's a heaven, tell them there's a God, and tell them that you have to behave in a certain way to attain all that. He says, no, behavior has nothing to do with it. Belief does. To destroy religion, they've tried to say what you have to do to get to heaven is impossible. You have to live a perfect life, and I can't do that. That's not what it says. To get to heaven, you believe in Jesus. Seriously, seriously believe and accept Jesus. I'd say on Monday, Rush was right. The Lord is not an unreasonable tyrant who makes these impossible demands on us. He is a loving creator God who wants to rescue us. He wants to deliver us. By our own volition, we have corrupted the creation. We have chosen sin. We have brought a curse on this planet. And God says, I have a plan for you to be saved. I have a plan to escape eternal darkness. And not only that, I have a plan for you to attain purpose and meaning and direction for your life here and now, for all your days, a way to attain peace and strength. And that way is His Son, who is the only way, the only truth, and the only life. The Lord who wants to be our rock, our fortress, our deliverer. At this point in his life, David is aging and he's realizing that God is his only strength, his only defense, and his only deliverer. And because he knew that, because he held on to that reality, he could weather and survive the constantly shifting sand of life, the constantly changing landscape of his life. He could survive the betrayal of people. He could survive the difficulties that befell him because the Lord was his strength, the rock of solidarity that he stood on. You know, this is a long song, and so you've got a reading assignment. I'm gonna challenge you to, on your own, read the rest of 2 Samuel 22 this week and look for those themes. God is our strength. God is our defense. God as our deliverer. You know, to sum it up, God is our everything. The Lord is everything. And when He is everything, then I tell you, life makes sense. Life makes sense when He is my everything. I'm not saying everything that goes on in life makes sense, because there is simply chaos and confusion in the world. But God's plan makes sense when He is my everything. I fear that too often we treat the Lord like an app that we download on our phone. Many people in the world, it's like they hear what Jesus can do. They hear about the benefits of the Christian life, and it's kind of like an app. I think I'll download that and try it. You know, and if it proves immediately useful and I can figure it out, then maybe I'll use it once in a while. But if there's a learning curve, if it doesn't work exactly like I, you know, I've done this many times. I've downloaded an app, spent 3 minutes with it, and like, I'll delete it. And for a lot of people, that's been their Christian experience. I tried Jesus, it didn't work. He doesn't want to be our convenience. He doesn't want to be a tool. He wants to be our everything, because if he's not everything, he's nothing in our lives. He is the one who has the plan. He not only forgives us, he has a plan and a purpose. He'll be our strength. He'll be our defense. He'll be our deliverer. Why don't we conclude our time together today? Let's sing that little chorus again, taken from 2 Samuel 22. Can we stand and sing this? We can even try it acapulco. The Lord is my rock, my deliverer, my refuge and my shield. I call to the Lord, who is worthy, by his mercy I am saved. The waves of death swirled around me, the torrents of destruction. The grave had nearly overwhelmed me, then I called to the Lord. The Lord is my rock, my deliverer, my refuge and my shield. I called to the Lord, who is worthy, by his mercy I am saved. Lord, we do ask that we would come to know you more and more as our rock, our fortress, our deliverer, our everything. We pray, O Lord, that you would help us to eliminate the distractions in our lives, or at least reframe them and regard them differently, and not let our gaze be taken away from you, to not let our eyes be taken off of you. But help us, O Lord, to fix our full trust on you, and to know that you can bear the full weight of our trust.